lineouts, racks.
Halls engage.
What an amazing try.
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class.
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Delcombe.
And I'm Brendan Nell.
The second weekend of the Springboks end of year tour, probably for most Springbok fans, the biggest game on tour, that's the one against England. And it's one that has probably been marked on the Bok calendar for the bulk of this year as a real must-win fixture. They come out of Edinburgh, Brendan, after a bit of a rusty performance, but in some ways, you know, a performance to be expected. Of course, the team selection threw a few things up in the air and we weren't entirely sure how the chips will fall. But in the end, a result that one could have predicted.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's a couple of things to say about that game. One, they made 11 changes from Nelspruit, and there's a bit of rust. They haven't played for a couple of weeks. So there was always going to be a bit of rust. And Scotland always, if I look back at all the games we played against Scotland at Murrayfield, even in South Africa, Scotland tend to keep us for about 60 minutes anyway and make it a very tough test match and then fall away in the last 20. And that's almost what happened here as well. So I suppose it's more or less like it's always gone against Scotland, but I'd say they're probably a much better team nowadays. And they certainly tested the box, although the box did exactly went back to type when they needed to. When the nuclear squad came on, not the bomb squad, they literally just bashed them into submission and sort of got the two penalties and the late try to make the scoreline look rather flattering. But I thought it was a rather sloppy performance from the box. There was a lot of knock-ons. The kickoff receipts weren't good. Yeah, there's a lot of things that Rossi could hammer on this week ahead of the England game. And, of course, this is the one that the box want to win.
Yeah, look, I mean, it doesn't matter who you are, but in terms of your strength in depth, if you're going to make that many changes, it will always impact, certainly for the start of the game, sort of the general cohesion, the fluidity in attack perhaps. And we saw some of that in the Bok first half performance. But you spot on. I mean, once the bomb squad came on, for the opposition to sustain their effort over 80 minutes up front is just so difficult. It really is a complete and utter game changer. And I can see why people are upset about the bomb squad and wanting to outlaw it, et cetera, et cetera. But it is just so difficult to counter. And that was just another example of, you know, the strength really of Springbok rugby. And it'll be interesting to see whether the Springboks go down that route again this weekend, because the last couple of fixtures against England, they haven't gone the bomb squad route. They've gone the more conventional 5-3. The last time they deviated from that was a very famous occasion, of course, the 2019 Rugby World Cup final in Yokohama, where again, you know, the strength in forward numbers eventually won the day for the Springboks. But it'll be interesting to see if they want to revisit that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there is a case there for reverting back to the team that played at Nelspruit. They're going to play, obviously, their strongest team. But when I say Nelspruit, I mean, do they revert back to Imani the Bokket Flower for maybe give the ball a bit more air, or do they go the safe route and go with Hundre? I think what's going to be more interesting to me is what England do, because they've been stung by two defeats against Australia and the All Blacks. And wasn't it wonderful? For the first time in my life, I can say it's wonderful to see the Wallabies win at Twickenham. It's always nice to see England lose at Twickenham, but I'm being a bit flippant now. To me, the big thing is going to be, what do England do? Do they revert to what they did at the World Cup semi-final and go for a Freddie Stewart at the back and a George Ford and play it sort of a percentage up and under, trying to keep the scoreline down? Or do they stick with Marcus Smith and some of the great outside backs they've got and try and take the box on? I'd hope it's the latter, because I think we'd see a much better game. But I could easily see, under the pressure Steve Borthwick's under at the moment, maybe revert to trying, to play it safe, so to speak.
I mean, if you've watched the last two games, then you'd have to say Marcus Smith has been head and shoulders their best player, certainly the most influential player. And if you've proven that over and over again, then surely the role that is identified for you on match day is that you get as much out of this person as possible. Put him in a position where he can affect the game. And England have drifted from that on both occasions. But it would almost numb the mind if they were to make a different call on that and not pursue the Marcus Smith Avenue. So, but that's their problem. I mean, it's apart from, you know, whether they play him or don't play him, there are other issues that they need to solve. And I mean, the defense certainly is an issue that would be discussed and worked on this week. There's no doubt about that. It just looked like they lacked a lot of cohesion. And I mean, I also saw some of the reports in some of the UK papers after that game, where they're talking about maybe the players aren't buying into the general Steve Borthwick plan. Well, we can't speak with any authority on whether that is the case or not, but they do seem a little disjointed. There's no doubt that they aren't the cohesive unit that we saw in patches in the World Cup last year.
No, exactly. I mean, when they played the box in that semi-final, there was a clear intent in what they wanted to do. There was a clear game plan, as ugly as it was to watch, but they certainly executed it. Well, also, I mean, the last 2 weeks and the last two games, there were patches where they were actually absolutely brilliant on attack, that they could have carved up any side in world rugby. And but then there would be these lapses in defense where the defense didn't actually, almost looked like they were caught between two defensive systems. They
weren't sure. Between two stools,
Yeah. And it cost them big time. So, I mean, I saw also one of the UK papers saying Steve Borthwick keeps on going on this game plan, even though it keeps on blowing up in his face. And so, I mean, there is sort of rising discontent there. That's why I say the pressure is going to be an interesting thing to see what England does, because pressure on international coaches normally forces them to do strange things, and that's not always good.
And as much as that game is one to look forward to, there's also elsewhere a big game in Paris where the All Blacks also seeking to go on unbeaten on the end of year tour face France. They've had some tasty matchups the last while. New Zealand actually have a very good record in France the last decade and a half, or maybe even longer, but they did lose the one that kind of mattered at the start of last year's World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fabulous game to watch. And I think for any neutral, you'd want to watch that game, any rugby fan. I just think both sides, it's an interesting one, because New Zealand, if they go unbeaten on this tour, that team has improved significantly. I think they can already, under Scott Robinson, say from where they were in Cape Town to now, they haven't played particularly All Blacks rugby. They've almost played more like the Springboks in terms of finding ways to win than they have a traditional All Blacks that are throwing the balls around type rugby. But they've certainly improved a lot as a squad over these last couple of months. And I've enjoyed watching them. Of course, it's one of those games where we know that no matter what New Zealand does, if that certain halfback throws one backflip pass, we're going to be, the commentators going on about 5 minutes all the time. But they're certainly going to give us things to talk about.
It's a much anticipated game as well. I mean, we've spoken about those qualities that keep you in the game, like the All Blacks have displayed, certainly the game against England. You need champion sort of qualities in you. There's a mindset that you have to display. The Springboks obviously did that last week as well. When things didn't go their way, Scotland fought back, and you could just sense that the Springboks sort of kept things tighter and decided, okay, this is the moment where we actually need to set ourselves apart. And champion teams can do that. Now, that doesn't happen by accident. And we spoke to somebody who shed some light on the topic, mental toughness. I'll leave it to you to explain what our guest spoke to us about.
I think when you mention his name, everybody will know him. He's worked with every single top South African athlete. He worked with the World Cup winning 2007 rugby team. He was the sports psychologist or a mental coach. He's currently consulting the Bulls, as well as everybody from AB de Villiers he mentions it himself, all his clients, and obviously top sportsmen and sportswomen around the world. So he's certainly somebody who knows a lot about the subject, and he gives us a great insight and a great chat. And especially if you've got kids who are aspiring sportsman, he's got some good tips for you. So have a listen to Henning Gericke, the one and the only. Have a listen. Joining us today is somebody who really needs no introduction in the sporting world in South Africa. He was the sports psychologist to Jake White's 2007 World Cup winning side. He's now with the Bulls as well. He consults to them, and
to a host of other stars, and I'm sure if I ask him to rattle off his CV, he'll tell us a few of them. Henan Kerecker, welcome to The Last Drop.
Thanks, guys. It's great to have a chat, and something we all have got passion about and love. So it's great chatting to you guys.
Liam, do you want to jump in? And
no, well, I want to start off by just welcoming Henan. I mean, we the podcast doesn't just focus on the field stuff and rugby politics. At you know, we try and touch as broadly as we can when it comes to the sport that we love and adore. And obviously, what you do is an integral part of not just the high performance end of it, but obviously also the well-being of the actual individuals. So thanks for taking the time.
100%. Looking forward to have a chat.
I think maybe let's start and just in terms of people who don't understand what a sports psychologist does. I know everybody's got this idea when they talk about psychologists, they think of a guy sitting there with a notepad, somebody lying on a couch, etc., and talking about all their problems in the world. But that's not quite what you do, is it?
No, definitely not. You know, I'm a clinical psychologist. I qualified as a clinical, but it was always my way to go to work more with positive stuff, making a difference. And I got involved years back, actually, my Mpumalanga rugby team, and we were winning. Rassie was actually a coach of Free State that year, and we beat him twice. We beat Heineken Meyer's Bulls team. So, and then, you know, just things happened to me, you know. But when I got to the box, they called me cop doctor. So I don't know if it's good or not. But anyway, yeah, it's for me, Brendan and Neil, for me, it's more high performance. You know, I don't even like to refer to myself as a sports psychologist because there's so many perceptions about it. And a high performance coach is actually looking at how can you raise the bar always? How can you get a champion mindset? How can you get the culture going? So it's so much more. And then, of course, the well-being of sport people. So it's much more than sports psychology is actually a little bit limited, I think.
When you explain that, I mean, I get sort of two-thirds of the picture, and people probably also wonder about it. Would your focus be, I mean, obviously, if a rugby team ropes you in, you obviously have to answer to them. But is your focus just getting the best out of the team? Or do you actually have to drill down into the individuals and what their needs are to get to the best possible 15 and 23 and so on and so on?
Yeah, definitely. You know, when you work in a team environment, you need to be so sensitive for the dynamics because the coach has got, of course, you need to support the coach as well. You need to connect well with the coaching staff. There's no ways you're going to be successful and help the players if you haven't got the buy-in of the coach. So, yes, then of course, you know, you look at the culture and have synergy with the coach. And of course, there will be one-on-ones, players you want to talk to. But again, you know, it's again not having a problem, but how can I help you to be even better? What can I help you to think differently under pressure when you got that last kick maybe? So one-on-ones is definitely part of it. But, you know, my style is never try to force it. You know, that's in the sport world. You know, you don't want to force something when you really form a relationship with players. And that's for me the most important thing, forming relationship, this trust. And then they'll reach out to you. You know, it was so great. I was this weekend in Hopetown, you know, and had a mana aunt with Ruan Pinar and Franz Stein. And I haven't seen him for a long time. But just connecting with them again, you know, it felt like yesterday winning the World Cup with them. And I think that's what made me, if I can say, successful in terms of I formed a relationship. I care for the person. And it's not just performance, you know, it's really, really, really push people and see potential in themselves that they don't see. And it's on a group level as well as the individual level, of course.
Now professional sports, obviously a cutthroat business. Coaches, they say there's only two types of coaches. Those are getting hired and those are getting fired. And in between, everybody's just obviously trying to get by. But there's so much on, I mean, if you take a normal week, and we work with obviously the teams every week, there's so much emphasis on training and tactics and things like that and game reviews and, you know, video sessions and stuff. Whereabouts do you come in with what a team does? I know you obviously work with them before the season hopefully starts or get some time there. But during a season, during a high-pressure week like the URC or a Springbok test week, how would you fit into that week?
Yeah, you know, usually I like, again, with the coaching staff and with the senior players, I like to get involved with the senior players because they create the culture and get a theme for the week. if you get a theme for the week, whatever you want that week, say Russia's playing the first game, Scotland now, what will be their theme? So getting involved or being involved with a team like that, driving that theme, having sessions maybe with the leadership in the beginning of the week in terms of on-field communication, how can we be smarter? How can we understand one another? What is the need of the captain there? How does he feel? Decision-making. So help that key inner circle to make good decisions, to understanding one another. And then maybe having a session with the team as well. It's not the deadly average session. If we think it's important to have that session with the team, sometimes the coach wants that session. Sometimes just standing back and have a feeling what will be the best. And of course, then work with some individuals. And sometimes I don't even make appointments with players. I'll just say, spend a minute or two, even just I pick that up, you know, and I want you to think about it. And if you've got a good relationship, you can do it that way. But getting somebody formally in and I chat to him about it, that doesn't work for me. You know, I want it very informal, very, so that'll be my way, you know. Work with the leadership, work with the coaching staff. What is our challenge this week? What are the key mental things we need to be sharp? And like you said, you know, there's so many technical things involved. And I think a lot of times we neglect the mental side still, you know. And I think that's why Rossi and the box are doing so well, because he understands, or the team, it's not just Rossi, of course. They understand the psychic of the players. And if you understand the psychic of your players, what's needed? You know, I'm actually very excited. I'm working at the moment and it's up and down. I started to work with Kaizer Chiefs and I enjoy it massively. You know, they won the other night 4-0. They're going to play Sundowns on Saturday now. They lost Saturday again. So it's a little bit more challenging than rugby, actually. But again, the same principles, you know, get that relationship going, get the buy-in from the coach, see where can you add value, you know? And a lot of times, I must say, the pressure's on the coaching staff more than the players. So if I think back in my career, I focus a lot on the coaching staff, the pressures they're having, their feedback during the game for players, not sure because they haven't got clear, calm thinking. And you can't compare, you know, but South Africans, mostly we're very emotional. And not all coaches, but you know, watching Franco Smith, you know, it was great seeing him calm and composed, you know. And then, of course, Rossi is more emotional and people will, and I'm not saying one is wrong, one is right, but at the end of the day, you need to be in a good mental space to make good decisions, you know. But yes, I'll a little bit expand on that question. But yeah, it's a combination of things, but that's how I see the week. You need to be in touch with what's needed for that team. Sometimes you work less. More important games, you'll do less, not working harder, you know. You need to understand what that team needs for that specific week.
Henning, your methodology, people, I think, tend to forget that you were an accomplished middle distance athlete. To what degree did you take the things that happened to you as a middle distance athlete and applied it to what you do now?
Yeah, I think it's a great question for me, actually, because my whole life was, you know, I had a coach, Farnes Boyce, and he taught me about discipline, picking me up in the mornings with his old bucky and learn how to be self-motivated, you know. So I don't believe you motivate people. You see good things in them, and then you help them to develop that. You know, and middle distance helped me. You know, I ran 10 sub-4-minute miles. I ran a world record when I was 16 years old for the junior, and then I had a lot of ups and downs, you know. I got a scholarship from America. I tore my tendons. I came back. It was 2 years compulsory military service. And then suddenly I was losing. I couldn't handle it. I think the guy's name was, I can't remember. I think his name was Juan Fourie. just joking. Tangana, but he was a great athlete. And suddenly I was losing. I couldn't handle that, actually, because I want to win. And there I learned about fearful failure and how to break the mental barriers, understand yourself and self-awareness. So I think being an athlete, even individual athletes, maybe it's more important than being a team player. I played Crane Week as well, even though it was primary schools. You know, I captained Uli Schmidt. He was actually the scrum of the team. That was the second Crane Week of those years, and it was 1973. But it taught me a lot about self-discipline, about pressure, about knowing yourself. It's about going through pain barriers. Yes, and then afterwards, I mean, I've learned a lot of other things. What is mental toughness? That's part of mental toughness, but I've learned working with cricketers, we can a little bit talk about that. What's really mental toughness? Because a lot of times people think mental toughness is just hard, pushing, believe in yourself. There's so much more in mental toughness. But yes, to answer your question, being an athlete really helped me to push through pain barriers, understand myself. Yes, and that played a massive role.
I want to jump in here. Maybe this is just a sidebar and not to bit off what we're talking about. But when you talked about, struggling as an athlete and overcoming sort of losses and dealing with those sort of things, we know we live in a country where every rugby player wants to become a Springbok. Every parent thinks their child is probably a potential Springbok. And I'm sure you've come across that quite often. We've come across it every school. There are those type of parents who push their kids quite hard, et cetera. In terms of that, just advice for parents who've got kids who obviously got some talent and they want them to go far, but are maybe a bit scared and in terms of pushing them too hard or trying to be that, parent from hell.
Yeah, I know. I wrote the book actually. It's just been out now the last 6 months about inspiring parents, creating champions in sport and life. And it's all about I more than Stan's parents wrote something for me, Kurt Lee Ahrens, Kanan Moody, Faf du Plessis, Mrs. South Africa, and all those things I put together. I said, what is the makeup of a champion, a young champion? And for me, it's, a star is not fearful failure. I think that's important, Actually, encourage your child to fail. Now you said, Henning, how can that be? Because life is about failure. Life is about being a warrior. Life is about learning. Life is about growing. Life is about not your dreams, your child dreams, So that's all thing. And we live in times that we think you need to be perfect. There's nobody that's perfect. I can promise you that. Not an Ernie Els that I know quite well, and or whoever you had mentioned. Nobody is perfect. And if you can help your child to be brave, to enjoy himself and his self-image, and that's a very important thing. His self-image is not dependent. And it happened with me actually. When your self-image is dependent on the way you perform, then it's up and down because your confidence can be up and down. And it's one thing I always teach parents. Confidence is a thing that can go up and down. AB de Villiers, Faf de Klerk, whoever, every name you can mention, them, Coolidge, they will be up and down confidence. But your self-image need to be solid. And for me, it's that's about challenging yourself, having not fearful failure, being brave. Don't compare yourself, your child, with anyone else. And let them feel good about who they are. And the message, the words, I believe in you, is the most some of the most important words that child need to hear and help developing a growth mindset. So there's so many, we can talk hours about that because that's part of my passion, but that's just briefly a little bit. Yeah, there's so much parents can do. And the interesting thing is, guys, if you listen to Amore Steyn and you've listened to a Tatiana and you listen to the real champions, the pressure was coming from within, And of course you get parents in the tennis world that will push their child. And I call it tough love. So one must understand tough love is very important, but tough love is not forcing your child to do it. It's when your child decides, I want to do that, it's no easy way out. Then he needs to learn discipline because that was your child's decision. Then you need to have tough love with him because then you're going to make him a champion as well. But it's not putting pressure on him to perform. It's actually developing character and those things. But yeah, that's a great question, actually.
Henning, I was very tempted to interrupt you when you said nobody's perfect. I was going to say except John Eales, but I'm glad I didn't. You kind of touched on a point now that is also important, where you look at maybe when you started out in your profession and looked at the dynamics and the things that you had to deal with then, and compared to 2024, where players have different things that may weigh them down. It's not just the pressure from the coach, it's pressure everywhere. There's pressure, especially on social media. What is your message there? I mean, what do you tell people, or what do you tell players? Do you embrace it? You go out there and sort of just, go out there and confront it head on, or do you turn the other way?
Yeah, it's like you're so right. Social media, and you want to make it. I maybe touch on it briefly, but for me, it's you more than what you do. You being as well. So I really try to push players, not you, not just the doing. Who you are defines you, or what you do defines you. It's who you are actually. So you're not just the doing. You're a being. So for me, it's very important that self-image, and then of course self-awareness. know, surround yourself with good people. You know, I know one of my, actually, I feel like a father for him a lot of times. A guy like Kurt Lee, I spend a lot of time with him. I've got such a lot of respect for him, you know, and you need good. And I'm not saying I'm a good person, but it's good to be around good people, your inner circle. And I think a lot of sport people, I mean, if we can name people that had tough times and after rugby, there's a lot we can name that didn't make it after rugby in life. Actually, they're not coping. And it's a lot of times they surrounded themselves with the wrong people. And the whole identity was sport. And it can't be your identity. It's just a part of your life. And there's a poem, if Rudyard Kipling wrote it, and that's a perfect poem, actually. And if you can handle your ups and your downs, and the same, your high's not too high and your low's not too low. So that's life, you know. And there's such a lot you can help players, but being a mentor for them and be there for them and just give them those types of advice, you know. And that's important.
I want to throw it around another way. You talk about how players and athletes handle these sort of disappointments and the work you do with them. And I want to bring up, and I'm just going to use him as an example because it's one that everybody probably who listens to the show and watches these videos will identify with. Marnie Lubbock, obviously great Springbok player, basically won the game against Scotland in the World Cup, but obviously went through quite a bit of disappointment with his kicking. This past weekend, playing for the Stormers, he got a yellow card against Glasgow, and that cost them a bit. And he's a player that's under pressure. He missed the kick against Argentina in the Rugby Championship. That meant the Boks lost it. Although any coach will probably tell you that they shouldn't have been in that position in the first place. All the pressure shouldn't be on him. Now, he's a player that, and he's just an example that, obviously, after things like that happen, a disappointment like that happens, social media people pile on, people start making funny jokes and memes and sending videos around. And I just thought maybe to ask the question from the point of view of what would you like people to know? Because you deal with those players when they go through those sort of things, and I'm sure it affects them. It would affect anybody. But those people on the outside, the fans who are obviously very passionate, very emotional, and think at times it's just a big joke. What would you like them to know about those times that those players go through?
Yeah, I think it's so tough. I remember Buta Chamberlain came to me after the Currie Cup final. He said, Henning, shit, I wanted that kick so badly. And because in the past, you know, I played for the Sharks and was the Bulls now. And, you know, those things happen, you know. So they go through such a lot of mental things because they put so much pressure on themselves. And they'll never do it, of course, on purpose, you know. So as South Africans, unfortunately, maybe that's the sport world. We've quickly, for instance, here as well, people will say things about him and it's outspoken. It's good. For me, it's not passion. It's actually getting into people's personal life, and it's always going to happen. But as a player, you can't control those things. So whatever you're going to tell people, you'll always get the people that knows the best and will tell you something. So you need just the skill to handle those things. To what is the voices you're going to allow to be part of you, and what is the voices you need to keep outside? Because there's a lot of negative voices that influence you. And one of the most important voices is your inner voice. So if you missed, and that's got to do with your belief. So Marnie Lubbock, I don't know him, but I mean, as a player, he's... I'm sure because he failed a few times now. So what happens to you? Your belief system starts. It's not just being positive. Your belief system start thinking, there it goes again. So you need to challenge your belief system as a player, and how are you going to change that belief system and have a routine like Dan Carter when he missed his first few kicks playing for New Zealand. And what did he start doing? Feeling grounded, got into a good space. He calls it or blue head space, that you feel basically, you know, you need to take control over that. So there's ways you can help a player with that, and definitely to help with that pressure. But to tell the public to behave different, and it's for players, it's so tough, it's so personally, and it takes a while for them to get over it, of course. And you know, they've got this bravado, they're fine, but inside, and some of them are just more sensitive than others. That's a challenge. You know, a guy like Hafi de Toi, I remember. Or whenever, you know, when those guys are been there's a lot people are saying, and if you haven't got a good somebody that can help you deal with that, it becomes part of your subconscious mind and your whole beliefs, and then it's challenging to change those beliefs.
Henning, this may sound like a strange one, but if you were able to sort of gather a group of fans, a group of commentators, media, different stakeholders in rugby, and sit them down and sort of just talk them through the struggles that players go through, what would be the message that you would put out there?
It's like, I mean, you're not gonna help them by at the soccer. Actually, there was a plea now for the fans, the Kaiser Chiefs fans, not booing and being negative about your team, because you're not actually doing them any favors. And you know, you like I said again, you can tell people what they're going through, because they're going through emotional tough stuff. They harden themselves, they're tough. Sport people are perfectionists, they want to do well, they train hard, but the whole public knows what they're doing. It's exactly the same. If you're a CEO and everybody knows what you're doing, so put yourself in their shoes a little bit, and then you'll understand a little bit what they go through and how can you know? We had the other day, actually was quite great. We had a business, a few guys from the business world connecting with our players, and that was great. That was great, sharing how they deal with pressure and what is life after rugby, and just to have a little bit more understanding. But like I said, players choose to play rugby, to play cricket, so that's part and parcel of what's going to happen. You know, you need to be mentally stronger and deal with those things, because you've got a passion crowd, passion. So that's for me the great players. They can deal with that. You think a Nas Botha didn't deal with whatever happened to him, or Morne du Plessis years back, or you can recall whoever. You need to have that mental toughness, that calmness, that cool, calm thinking, and that actually inspires you. You know, so. So yes, a message for business people, what the players are going through, they take it personally, it's tough on them, they won't just, if something happens, but I mean, that's not going to change the situation. For me, it's making the player stronger internally.
Yeah, I think...
When you talk about... Sorry, Benico.
I was going to say, just to add to that, I mean, I think people sometimes don't realize that just like the rest of us, some of them might have a bad night's sleep, or might have things going on in their relationships, or you know, other things that we don't even think about when you think of a top sportsman. Stuff that happens to all of us in our daily lives as well that affects them as well.
For interrupting. I just think if you're part of the Springbok, you guys have been part of it, then you know it's so unnatural. I mean, you actually so far away from the reality, actually, as a elite sports guy, because you get a lot of fans, you get a lot of people. It's like you, like your own ego. That's part of the danger, you know. So it's a very unnatural world for the player to be in. Unnatural in a way, the attention, the fans, and it's a great stuff, but it's not. It's hell of a different outside there when players stop playing and need to know, okay, now like people forgot about me. So that's something that really, if you live close to the Springboks or even the Bulls or the cricket side, or it's unbelievable the personal space the fans will get into your space, and we'll see at the moment, I don't want to go into, but I mean accusing and what's happened in the relationship. It's unbelievable, you know. So you don't know what happened, but still, no, that's quite tough for somebody, and people are not going to change. Mm-hmm. But they're human beings, they go through things, and you just need to be very strong emotionally and mentally and even spiritually strong to cope with everything that's going to come your way as a sport person.
Have you had to counsel a lot players post their careers who are struggling with that transition of where they had all the adulation and now suddenly it stops? You're becoming being absorbed into sort of normal society.
100%. We try to be more proactive now. That's why we got this getting Tondra had a session. He actually organized it with me. Congress Shivang had organized it, and we had this business session that we start becoming more proactive, because it's too late after, you know, and that really happened. It happened with a lot of players, and you're lucky or fortunate if you find like a Victor Matfield or Scott Burger, and you can put your energy back into something you love. But there's a lot of players that need to do something totally different, and not a lot of them studied, and so that is a massive challenge. But I think it was even worse earlier years. You know, I mean, a friend from mine, Donny Gerber. I just think about Donny. You know, he was like, if he played in times like now, he'd been a millionaire over and over, and having challenges. Or those really great players in the past, I think it was even tougher for them finding a job. And rugby is gone now. And now it's, you know, social media, marketing, there's so much more opportunities for players to be involved in the business world than years back.
Henning, I was going to ask you, just from a personal point of view, I mean, yes, your chance to just reflect a bit. Everybody knows you were with Jake and them at the World Cup, and we were there as well. It was a fantastic 6 weeks in France. A couple of scares along the way, but it was really a good 6 weeks. But other than that, in your career, maybe just speak about some of your highlights, some of the stuff that really, when you sit down and one day when you retire, you're going to sit back and think, geez, those are the moments that I really savor.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned that, you know, the relationship you formed with players in the cricket world, AB de Villiers, Faf, in the rugby world. So many players, you know, Jock, Fury, so relaxed before games. Osterrand, that's been down and out and coming back. And youngsters coming through now, like a Kurt Lee, like I mentioned, and all those relationships, you know. But what I've learned, a very important thing, if I think back, is I grew massively in terms of working with people, and I'm still growing, I'm still learning, and you never know it all. There's a saying that goes, is what you learn after you think you know it all. And what I've learned is definitely to have calm, clear thinking, a calmness, a relaxedness, a composure. And that for me, that I've learned a lot about mental toughness. You know, and in the beginning of my career, you'll always think about toughness and psych people up and get people emotionally there. But under pressure situations, I've learned, you know, if I think about losing to the Bulls, and I was part of the Sharks, those 2008, I think you were, of course, you were with the Bulls, maybe those 2007, actually. Dick Meer took off Percy and John Smith 10 minutes before the final whistle, and Frans Steyn had that kick, and he missed that kick. It wasn't in front of the poles, but Albert scored, but it's just a little right, you know. It was actually a 9 out of 10 put James didn't take that kick. So those are the memories, the good things as well as the things, and the Bulls won there, and the change room that really people feel so down and think, yeah, we had it, and we just lost it. In the Cricket World Cup quarterfinal, losing to New Zealand, winning a World Cup, winning a final with the Storm of the Western Province, winning a Curry Cup with the Sharks 2008, winning two Curry Cups with the Bulls. But it's not those winning things. It's like those emotions and those people working towards something, whatever. Cameron van der Berg, I worked with him and wanted that gold medal and broke a world record and won, of course, a gold medal. Those memories will forever be the ups and downs, the toughness of people, the sadness, or the just we put in so much effort into this thing, and that's life, actually. So yeah, that's, if you ask me that question, actually, it's a combination of what sport actually is a metaphor, what life is all about. You're great. I had great, great ups, but I had really downs as well in terms of losing games and won that cricket so badly, and seeing Faf and AB choking or whatever, not communicating under pressure. You see it there and it goes, and you haven't got control over that. So there's so many things in the sport world that's wonderful to experience, and again, you need to take the ups and the downs, and then that's part of this being involved in this high performance environment.
We spoke, or you have mentioned it a few times, you know, the need, or there is the players having to perform under pressure. There are these big moments in games. Are there some players who are born with BMT, or is it something that you have to learn?
You know, of course, your temperament plays a role. A guy like Ash Umla, cricketer, you know, when he gets 100 runs or zero, he's the same. You know, so it depends. People are, a guy like Scott Burger, okay, that's players from the past, you know, they just, they're natural, not heavy on pressure. They can cope with pressure. But there's players definitely, and it will be unfair to mention players, but there's definitely players that really, when the pressure's on, their temperament, they harden themselves, they're tough, they're overthinking, over-worried. You know, it's difficult for them to get into that state of calm, clear thinking and do that. And we still got it now. I mean, I see it every day. I see the cricket team, our women cricket team, losing that and that final. And our men, even it was even tougher. Now you could say, yes, what happened there? Is it the combination? But I could see before it's easy to talk afterwards, of course, but they were too psyched up, actually. And you could see, I'm talking about the women now, New Zealanders are relaxed and enjoying it. So that's what I've learned, you know. Create an environment where people, when the situation is never bigger than what you got inside yourself. And there's certain type of players that you need to help with specific skills to help them to cope with those circumstances. And other players, you don't need to, you can just leave them because it comes naturally for them. So I would say, yes, temperament plays a role. But then your environment, the coach, the feedback, the way you prepare for that week, the way you talk about winning all the time. And that I've learned, you know. Everyone wants to know the will to win. No, nobody that I work with or really high-performance team doesn't want to win. Everyone wants to win. So the will to win is not, for me, the key thing. You need to have that, but know how to win. Know how to win is under pressure, calmer, being aggressive when it's needed, good communication. Those feels, those things you can learn, actually, to perform under hard, to really perform when the pressure is on, you know. There's always less communication. There's a lot of things under pressure. So if you can teach the team how to, under pressure, what happens to you and identify it and have triggers when you're in that situation, you just say, okay, we're here now. Let's be grounded. Let's stay in the moment and not get ahead of ourselves. I mean, it happened with the Bulls playing. I'm part of it, you know, playing the final last year. You know, we were 14-0 up, and then the last, I mean, they scored Glasgow right at the end. We could have scored twice, but it was a mall. We didn't have the calmness, composure, and you talk about it. But then you hope that senior players will just get it right then. And sometimes it happens. Sometimes it's not just coming your way. So that's actually, but there's definitely principles how to cope or how to be at your best under pressure. You know, and Gary Player had a great saying, you know, for me, it's not pressure. It's a privilege to be in this situation. So it's a way of thinking about it. Immediately, you enjoy the pressure. You embrace the pressure. And it's, if you can have that mindset, that thinking, it's going to, and your players and help players to have that mindset, and you already one step ahead.
Anything, I hate to call it, call to stop us here, but we said 15, 20 minutes and we probably go on for hours here. I think we're going to have you back at some point, and I think we're going to have to talk a bit more about some of these things. But I think for now, we're going to have to say thank you very much for joining us. Just if people do want to talk to you, or the parents of kids or that, where can they get hold of you? Do you have a website or an email or something like that?
Yeah. Thank you, guys. I really enjoyed it as well, you know. For me, talking about sport, I want to be authentic and just, you know, just share what I've learned and where I'm coming from. And yeah, I've got a website, henninggerike.com. And my email is henning.gerike1@gmail.com. So it's henninggerike.com is my website. And my email is henning.gerike1@gmail.com. And, you know, I must say it as well. I need to promote myself a little bit here as well. And I've just finished my seventh book now. So that's my passion at the moment, writing books, talk to people, and just sharing information. But thank you, guys. It was really great chatting to you. And yeah, it was great chatting to you. Thank you.
You don't have the book within arm's length there and you can maybe just show us if it's close by.
I'm actually sitting here, so I don't want to really push it now. If I just go, and I'll really be a second. This was actually my first book, Inspiring Champions, and interviews with really champions, Percy Montgomery and everyone. And I'm actually working on a new edition of what does it make to be a champion? What is mental toughness? It's going to sound out, and I didn't plan it to have it here. But then I've got this book, Creating Your Champion Team, that I wrote, you know, and it's all about if you're a coach, if you're a CEO, and not just rugby, or you're a leader, a salesman, how do you get people together and work together as a team? You know, and then I don't want to show that now. I wrote the diary as well. And the latest book is actually this one. This is the Afrikaans. It's the only book I wrote in Afrikaans, Inspirerende Ouerskap. And this is a story of, you know, I can just show you maybe to finish it off because Brendan said our time is finished. But that's a picture of Kurt Lee and his mother. Mm-hmm. And it's about she always had gave him the advice, don't worry what other people think about you. Climb those little steps, my child. So every time before he plays a game, he shares that with me. I'm going to climb the step again. I'm starting again. And he writes it in his collar, actually, start again. So just passionate about books and people. But that's thanks for the opportunity to
share. The Kurtley story is a remarkable one. So, yeah, well done there.
Yeah,
I know. He's got a great story. There are so many stories of really people that can inspire all of us.
No, well, thanks for joining us. And, as I say, we'll get you back on again at some point to talk a bit more about stuff. I'm sure our listeners will enjoy that. But thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Henning.
Okay, buddy. Thank you, guys. Bye.
Cheers.
As always, a very interesting chat with Henning and, of course, massive games this week. And one last one, we didn't mention them. Ireland, who I think looked a bit flat and maybe hitting their peak under Andy Farrell, face Argentina on Friday, which is an interesting one. Argentina having bludgeoned Italy into submission. So that will be a good test for Ireland as well. But lots of massive rugby this weekend.
Yeah, that could become quite a feisty one if Argentina get a foothold in that game. It could get very interesting. You'd still expect Ireland to win, but it could become an arm wrestle. And then it could be, I see it as one of those games that can be quite tight. It'll be very confrontational up front, but it can also become a little loose. And if it does, Argentina will certainly be in the game.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, I was in Buenos Aires last week, and there's a lot of talk about this game as being their big test on this tour. So they're going to be massive. But on that, we're going to leave you. It's going to be a massive weekend. I think we're all going to be watching. We'll be back with all the news and some commentary and some great guests next week. So keep listening.
See you then.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app.
That is world class!